You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today is from a letter that I have a love-hate relationship with. Nobody really knows who the author of Hebrews is, but it has had, I think, an undue influence on the development of what's called Christology. I've been accused of having a very low Christology, meaning that I emphasize the humanity of Jesus and how all of us are children of God. Hebrews, on the other hand, has a high Christology, making the argument that the Jesus story makes the Jewish Yom Kippur obsolete, emphasizes Jesus' divinity and his substitutionary atonement, making him into something I'm not sure Jesus himself would recognize. At any rate, our very brief passage today is just a tiny part of a very long treatise on faith by the author of Hebrews. The best definition that the author can come up with is by reminding folks of the story of Abraham, who 1,700 years before Jesus left all that was familiar and comfortable and went to a new land to be the father of a new people. This is what's important to remember. Abraham's action is characterized as an act of faith. Not what he believed, not what he agreed to intellectually, but his action.
Our words of wisdom are from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1.
Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
When Sam was just a little spud, he asked me to help button up his shirt. I was in a hurry, and when we got to the bottom, we had one button left over and an extra hole at the top. Obviously, we had to undo it and start over. I was reminded of what one mother said on such an occasion. Honey, if you want to come out right on top, you got to get started right at the bottom. So, let's get in on revisiting the ground floor on faith. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that faith was a verb, not a noun. It's not something you can have, and inevitably, someone then asks about our passage today.
Well, what about faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see?
Sounds pretty definitive, but pretty slippery at the same time. So I wanted to circle back and make sure we're all starting with the bottom button. The concept of faith is one of the most misunderstood aspects of being a follower of Jesus. In fact, it's been misunderstood for a long time. If it weren't so true for so many, it would be funny. But Mark Twain said it over 100 years ago. Faith is believing what you know ain't so. Likewise, over 50 years ago, Anglican Bishop John Robinson criticized this shallow notion when he said that Christians have been asked to do what the Queen did in Alice in Wonderland, to believe six impossible things before breakfast. Sometimes church leaders have asked people to just accept things that don't make sense and have said that even though it doesn't make sense, you just have to accept it on faith, as though being Christian means that you can't also think at the same time. Some Christians define faith as believing goofy things.
I absolutely believe in the factuality of Noah and the Ark.
Really? Which one? Not counting the Gilgamesh epic the story was borrowed from?
there are at least two versions in the Bible itself, and they contradict one another on major points. But don't let the Bible get in the way of what you believe. It's the same with creationists. The only way you can actually be a creationist is if you steadfastly, at all costs, avoid reading the Bible. You got to kind of feel sorry for them. Some of the loudest defenders of biblical inerrancy end up ignoring the Bible whenever it fails to support their preconceived ideas. In the trailer for a Discovery Channel series called Egypt Untold, a church official threatens the archaeologists. If anything you discover in Egypt contradicts church teaching, you will not be allowed to publish. Yikes. And it's not just archaeology. Despite what scientists have proven about our human culpability in climate change, or whatever uncomfortable truths historians point out about America's past, or doctors insist that ivermectin is actually not a miracle drug but a horse dewormer, there are always people who respond, "Don't confuse me with facts." And many people's misunderstanding of faith can also create a cruel backlash to those who are already suffering. I can't tell you how many times people feel guilty for the illness or death of a loved one because they just didn't have enough faith. If you pray hard enough, your loved one will be okay. And then when something bad happens, detractors say, "Well, it was your fault because you didn't have enough faith." I remember running into an old friend from college who shared that he'd just come through 5 years of a serious health challenge. Having been diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of cancer, he was given only 3 years to live. But at the outset, he told the doctors that God had other plans. "So," he told me, "here I am 5 years later and I'm cancer-free, and the doctors just scratch their heads. Never mind the countless rounds of chemo, radiation, and 11 surgeries. But God gets all the credit, and my friend gets a great story about the power of his dazzling faith being rewarded with miraculous healing." And remember during the pandemic? The Fountains was among many reality-based faith communities who trusted public health officials, physicians, nurses, vaccines, and our neighbors to get through the fear and uncertainty of COVID. While other churches insisted that pretending the danger wasn't real and demonizing science was a test of faith. And this disconnect between rational action and magical thinking still divides our country. So here's the problem. We have to help people see that faith is not about believing a list of propositions. It's not giving mental assent to a set of doctrines handed down by the church. It's not wishing really, really hard that something will happen. As I've already mentioned, part of the confusion is that English itself is no help here. It's no wonder we treat faith like it's a possession, something you have more or less of, something you can run out of, something you can stockpile for a rainy day, when even Webster's defines faith as an unquestioning belief that does not require proof or evidence. That may describe how the word is often used today, but it is not the biblical idea. Some of you will remember a few weeks ago when I reminded you that the New Testament word that gets translated as faith is the Greek word pistis. It comes from the verb paito, which means to trust, to rely on, or literally to be persuaded. At its heart, biblical faith is not about believing impossible things. It's dynamic.
It's relational. It's about trusting enough to act. It is something you live. My New Testament professor, Paul Sampley, used to lament that English just doesn't have a good equivalent. For him, the best translation of pistis would be faithing. Since we don't have that verb in English, we're stuck talking about having faith, which makes it sound like something you possess. But the biblical writers are talking about something you do. If you hear someone say, "I just wish I had more faith," they're not being biblical. Faith is not something you have. It's something you practice. It's something you do. Every time you trust your life to something bigger than yourself and act on that trust, you are faithing. Think of it this way. Every time you get out driving in traffic, you are demonstrating faith that the cars coming the other direction will stay on their side of the yellow line. You don't have faith, you are faithing. And it's not just driving. Every time you tap your phone to pay for groceries, every time you board an airplane, every time you let a surgeon put you under anesthesia, every time you step into an elevator, you are faithing. You are trusting in something you don't control. That is closer to the biblical idea of faith than believing impossible things just because somebody told you to. Someone is going through the long process of healing from breast cancer surgery. She's bringing to bear all of her spiritual, physical, and relational resources to get well and even thrive through the chemotherapy. She is trusting her doctors. She is depending on her friends and family. She is cherishing every day, every moment. Put it all together, and she is on a journey of faithing.
Well, hang on. Ephesians 2 says, we are saved by faith.
Okay, but if you think saved by faith means all you have to do is believe in Jesus, then you're missing the whole point. Remember what we've just learned about the idea of faith, and then look at the word saved. The word translated as saved is from a Greek root that means to be made whole, which plays right into our whole Methodist shtick, because for Methodists, being a person of faith is not a one-off transformation. It's a lifelong process. Think of it this way. Instead of saying we are saved by faith, a much clearer and more biblical way of saying it is we are made whole by how we act. Or think about it another way. In one of our Living the Questions interviews with Brian McLaren, he asked, what if being saved meant being liberated? Liberated especially from all the layers of unnecessary claptrap that passes for religion. Marcus Borg wrote, faith is not believing some propositions about Jesus. Faith is not about what we think in our heads. Faith in the biblical sense always involves risk and commitment to what God is passionate about. It's more about what you give your heart to than what you give your head to. It's about a way of being. That distinction matters right now. We have spent decades enduring people insisting that they have Christian values. But values are not measured by the people you exclude or the creeds you profess. Jesus never asked, what statement of faith did you sign? He asked, what did you do for the hungry, the stranger, the prisoner, the sick? Faith is not what comes out of our mouths. It is revealed when someone examines our calendars, our checkbooks, our voting record, and the way we treat people with less power than ourselves. We would do well to look back to the 50s and 60s when good Christian folks all over the country had the correct beliefs about Jesus, but were deeply unrepentant racists. They were decent, law-abiding persons who were blind to racism in their schools, communities, and churches. And to be sure, they are alive and well today, resisting anyone who tries to connect the purity of their Sunday morning faith with the ways they are failing to follow the teachings of Jesus every other day of the week. On October 19, 1960, Martin Luther King joined students in a peaceful sit-in at the segregated lunch counter in Rich's department store in downtown Atlanta. He was arrested, along with dozens of others. But because of an earlier probation related to a minor traffic offense, he alone was sentenced to 4 months of hard labor in the Georgia state prison system. His imprisonment became national news, prompted John F. Kennedy to intervene on his behalf, and helped shape the 1960 presidential election. King didn't simply talk about justice. He was faithing, taking action, and putting himself in harm's way, because to not act meant the world he envisioned would never come to be. When MLK was battling the evils of bigotry and discrimination, his life was in danger many times, threatened by Christians. His wife and children were in danger, threatened by Christians. In the midst of crisis after crisis, fabricated by Christians, Dr. King often wondered if he could go on. But he was persuaded, he trusted, he acted with confidence that the Spirit would be his companion on each and every step he took on the path toward justice and freedom and equality. He embraced Jesus' vision for what the future could hold and faithed accordingly. Today, the same challenges are being faced in different guises. Across the country, we've watched clergy and congregations show up for frightened immigrant families, protest outside detention centers, feed migrants, defend LGBTQ+ young people, march against anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, and protect neighbors whose very existence has become a political flashpoint. When Sandy and I were in Minneapolis last month, we made our pilgrimage to both the Renee Good and Alex Preddy memorial sites, each of which still stirred deep discouragement and anger, the state of our political discourse in this country. To be there in person drove home the fact that Renee and Alex didn't simply believe something, they were faithing. They were acting in ways that embodied their commitment to justice and showed the depth of compassion they had for their neighbors. Meanwhile, politicians and preachers wrapped themselves in the language of faith while simultaneously mocking the disabled, demonizing immigrants, humiliating the poor, threatening universities, attacking judges, and embracing cruelty as a kind of badge of honor. Whatever else they're doing, it is not faith as the Bible understands it. It's foolishness. So when we hear our Hebrews passage saying, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see, do not fall into the trap of defining faith as something you have or something you possess that makes you superior to those around you. Read faith as the verb it is, and put it in the correct word order. Being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see shapes our doing and motivates our actions. as followers of Jesus, what we hope for and yet do not see is a world of compassion, justice, and equity. A world that we've been called to create and are nowhere near accomplishing. Faith is not a matter of believing a bunch of irrational, crazy things. It's not about believing things you know ain't so, so that God will somehow reward you. Faith is acting in a way that shows you have a vision for something greater than yourself. And in following the teachings of Jesus, have aligned yourself with Jesus' values and priorities. And as MLK wrote, faith is taking the first step, even though you can't see the whole staircase. Faith is not something you have and are rewarded for. It's not something you can stockpile and use as a shield against bad things happening. Faith is a verb, and it's only when we live in faith, when we're faithers, when we risk ourselves and give our hearts over to healing the world, that we've caught the vision of what faithing is all about. The world doesn't need more people claiming certainty and the righteousness of their cruel mistreatment of everyone they treat as less than human. What the world needs right now is the people who value compassion enough to make it real every day. The world doesn't need more fanatics trying to win God's approval by defending more doctrines. What it needs is faithers persuaded that welcoming strangers, protecting the vulnerable, standing with the forgotten, and telling the truth is at the heart of the gospel. A faith defined by doctrines and beliefs, it's nothing but foolishness. But a faith that gets your feet moving is the only kind of faith Jesus ever seemed to be interested in. So get out there and live as though the world Jesus imagined depends in part on you. Because it does. Go faith it. Be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.